The news the last few weeks hasn't particularly been very easy to follow, has it? It's not been a terrible, comfortable read, or at times a very comfortable watch for those of you. I think, I'm not sure if it's been on telly or if it's just been on social media, but Save the Children have done some particularly challenging and cutting adverts depicting a number of different things happening to children around the world. And the tagline at the end being, "Just because it isn't happening here doesn't mean it isn't happening." For the last couple of weeks, I've then been thinking, should we do something? How should we talk about this as a church? What should we do? Knowing that I was preaching in a couple of weeks' time, thinking, should we throw out the series that we're doing? Should we have a Sunday? We'll leave the Matthew as Emmanuel stuff alone. We'll preach on something else, and we'll address this topic in particular. And then I came to read the passage that I was meant to be speaking on. Okay, Chris, it's over to you. Now, I came to read the passage that I was meant to be speaking on. Do you want to try again? There we go. Thank you. And read this: "I desire mercy, not sacrifice," Jesus says. Matthew chapter 9, page 973, if you want to have it open in front of you. The passage is the call of Matthew. Matthew was a tax collector. Matthew was a tax collector. It means he worked for the Romans. The Jews weren't big fans of the Romans because the Romans were occupying the land they were in. So he was working for the enemy. And as a tax collector, you were perceived as, you were either corrupt, actually corrupt, or you were at least perceived to be corrupt. I think today it's a bit like working for FIFA. Yeah, okay. You, FIFA, if you're particularly anywhere high up in FIFA, you're either actually corrupt or at least perceived by a large number of people to be corrupt. It's something like that. And so the people, Sepp Blatter and those high up in FIFA, they're quite toxic people at the moment, aren't they? You don't really want to be mixing with them. If you're any kind of significant figure, you don't want to be around them. It's a bit like that. Matthew would have been something of an outcast, viewed as corrupt. I've sometimes thought it might have been a bit like being a parking attendant today. That, you know, if you're going around ticketing people's cars, you're not always people's favourite person, are you? It's not who they are, it's the job that they do. Parking attendants aren't people's favourite people. There's this sense of tax collectors being universally hated, corrupt, outcast. Today, let's remember those who are outcast, who aren't wanted, who seem like they have no home. Those here in our town and those around the world. But the amazing thing that happens in this story is that Jesus calls him. That Jesus comes up to this tax collector, this outcast, this sinner, and it says to him, "Follow me. Follow me." And then we find not just that. He doesn't just offer him a few words, but then we go on and we read that Jesus is having dinner at Matthew's house, and there's many tax collectors and sinners are there eating with him. It seems like Matthew throws a bit of a party, having been called by Jesus. He gets Jesus around to his house, invites his mates to come along, and they're sat there eating together. Meals back then were something that was very intimate. You only shared meals with people that you were close to. This wasn't something that you would just do. You wouldn't just have someone around for dinner. Sometimes it was a way of solidifying an agreement. If you'd made some kind of arrangement, made a deal, you might share a meal together as a way of kind of confirming that. Maybe there's this sense here of Matthew confirming that he was going to follow Jesus as they shared this meal together. And for the Jews, and certainly for the Pharisees, this was a big no-no. You didn't mix, you didn't share meals with these kinds of people. You didn't get intimate and up close with those who were like this, with those who were corrupt, with those who didn't have the right job, with those who were outcast. You just didn't do that. So they're asking questions. Why? Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners. And we see that for Jesus, it wasn't just enough to go and call Matthew, to say a couple of words and to invite him into this new life of following him. It wasn't just about a couple of words and then that was it. You get on with your life and I'll get on with mine. But actually, he was willing to get up close and personal. He was willing to go to his home. He was willing to share in this kind of intimate setting, to meet his friends. And we see that it wasn't even just about that, as in I'll come to you for just a kind of one-off occasion, for just something to come and make this agreement that, yes, you'll follow me. But actually, we see that Jesus' attitude is that of a doctor. Jesus says, verse 12, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but those who are ill. That Jesus' attitude is actually to come and to meet these people, to get involved in their life, and to seek to bring healing where they are broken. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. His desire is to come and to show mercy. He quotes from Hosea chapter 6, verse 6. He's quoting back to the Old Testament, where Hosea writes, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. And he shows that the test of our obedience to God, the test of whether we're really following Jesus or not, is about whether we're a people who are willing to show mercy. He's not ruling out the idea of ritual and sacrifice. He's not ruling out the idea that we might meet together and have something organized like a service like this. He's not saying that you don't do those things. But what he's saying is the touchstone, the test of whether you're really following Jesus or not, isn't whether you turn up to a temple and offer a sacrifice, isn't whether you eat and mix with the right people, isn't whether you turn up to church on a Sunday morning, but whether you're a person whose life is willing to be characterized by showing mercy. That actually what it means to be a disciple and to follow Jesus are to be those who show mercy, who bring healing to those who are broken, who call people to follow Jesus, to not just mix with the righteous, but to be those who are willing to call people to follow him. It elevates the right treating of those who are poor, who are oppressed, who are marginalized, above what we look like on the outside, above just going through the motions of turning up to something, of looking good. We're thinking about discipleship. Matthew is a manual for discipleship, of what it means to be a disciple and for going and making disciples. And we said right at the start that there'd be things that we learn through this, things that we are to know, things that we're to believe, things that we might say, and things that we have to do. This is very much something that we're to go and to do, to show mercy. And it's not just that we spot it here in this one isolated place in Matthew. We see it actually throughout this book, throughout this gospel, this news about Jesus. Go back to the Beatitudes, Matthew chapter 5. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. We catch the other side of it in Matthew chapter 18 with the story of the unmerciful servant. The servant who owed his master a huge debt, a massive amount of money, more than anyone would ever really be able to repay. And the master calls in this debt and says, come, pay back the money that you owe me. And he says, please, please give me more time. Please give me more time to pay it back. And his master takes mercy on him and says, I will cancel your debt. And the story Jesus told goes on and says that servant went out and he met another fellow servant who owed him a tiny amount of money, nothing much at all. And he calls in the debt from his fellow servant. And the servant says, please give me more time and I'll pay it back. And the servant says, no. And he has him thrown into prison. Jesus says the people were shocked by what had happened. They went and told his master. And the master took him and said, you'd been showed mercy, and so you should have shown mercy. Matthew chapter 18. Verse 32. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said, I cancelled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? And the point is that we have all been shown such mercy. We've just sung together, depth of mercy. Can there be mercy reaching even me? God the just his wrath forbears, me the chief of sinners spares. That we, people like us, have been shown the mercy of God. Such great mercy and forgiveness. And we should be those who are willing to go and to show mercy. Towards the end of Matthew chapter 25, we have that quite famous passage, the sheep and the goats. Page 995. Verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne, and all the nations will be gathered before him. And he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was ill and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you ill or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Whatever you did for the least in this world, you did for me. We see it all across the Bible, not just in Matthew, but in the often quoted Micah 6, verse 8. What does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Often quoted and well known. We see it even buried in books of the Bible that we perhaps might not turn to so often. Leviticus, good bit of Levitical law, Leviticus chapter 19 up on the screen. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I am the Lord your God. The Israelites were told that the foreigners who came and settled among them were to be treated just as they were. In fact, they were reminded of it. Something of the story of Israel, of their history of being slaves in Egypt, of being rescued, of themselves being refugees, was that they were to learn what that was like, that that was to be part of their identity, of being refugees, of being saved by God. And we're to be a people who've received mercy and who are willing to show that mercy to others, to offer radical hospitality, treating others as we would ourselves. Jesus quotes from Hosea chapter 6, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. You can find it in the Bibles on page 905, Hosea chapter 6. And if we go just a few verses before it, we read a bit more of what the context of that passage says. Starting from verse 4. What can I do with you, Ephraim? What can I do with you, Judah? Your love is like the morning mist, like the early dew that disappears. Therefore I cut you in pieces with my prophets. I killed you with the words of my mouth. Then my judgments go forth like the sun. For I desire mercy, not sacrifice, and the acknowledgement of God rather than burnt offerings. He says, what can he do with his people? Their love is like the morning mist, like the early dew that disappears. They say something in the morning and then that's it. It's gone. It's like mist. It's like dew. Their love for him seems fleeting and short-lived. He's saying he desires mercy, not sacrifice. That what he wants us to do is to be a people who live our whole lives for him. We can't profess to be a people who worship Jesus and then turn our backs on the crisis in this world. We sing together, "Break my heart for what breaks yours." It's in two of our songs, those sorts of lyrics. When we read in the media or see images of an innocent child fleeing war, a family searching for safety, who's drowned and washed up on a shore, surely this breaks God's heart. And we must allow it to break ours also, that we might respond with mercy and compassion. The amazing part of this story is not just the call of Matthew, not just that Jesus calls Matthew, but also Matthew's response. We talked about, when we looked earlier on in the Gospel of Matthew, about Jesus calling fishermen and saying it's remarkable that he should just call them and they'd leave such good jobs, they'd just get up and go. They had a quite reasonable job, a stable income. Matthew, all the more so. Here was someone who would have been rich, who would have been wealthy, who had a good job. And Jesus comes, stands in front of him and says, "Follow me." And immediately he gets up and he follows him. And this is Matthew. This is Matthew who writes the gospel that we are looking at, that we are reading. Matthew who writes Matthew's gospel. And it turns out that God in Jesus can stand before someone, can call them, can turn their life around in such a way that they can go from someone who's this rejected outcast sinner and use him to do something so amazing, to write a book of the Bible that we have today. When we were at Soul Survivor over the summer, we heard the story of a couple called Titch and Joe, who had done some quite amazing things in work that they've been doing in South Africa. But the great thing of this wasn't that they just told us about the work that they had been doing and how amazing what it was that they were involved in, but actually told us their background, their story of how they'd ended up getting to this place. And the story was of this guy, Titch, who at one point had been a professional cricket player, and he'd got his life in a complete mess. He'd ended up addicted to alcohol and drugs and found himself in a rehabilitation center. It seemed like his life had just turned into a complete mess and was over. Told us the story of Joe. Joe, who'd been married and her husband had died. And she had two children who were, I think, in their early teens when her husband died. And she said to God, "When my children are old enough, when they've grown up and they've left home, just let me die. I don't want to live anymore." And somehow these two met. I can't remember how they ended up meeting. And they got married. They lived in South Africa. And God began to place on their heart to work with orphans. If you've ever been to South Africa, you'll know that it's a place of great disparity, where there's very rich and very poor, very close together. And Joe started to go in and once a week would go in and feed orphans, feed children in one of the slums near where they lived. And it built and it grew, and soon they were doing it every single day. And now this couple have founded a village in South Africa where they provided homes and family for 1,000 orphans, working with the government, working with business, and they're looking to grow it, that they might have 10,000 orphans cared for in families of 10 with a mother. And at the heart of this village that they built is a school, is a hospital, and a church. And the whole point they wanted to emphasize was that actually this was people whose life was in a mess, who were far from God in some ways. And God took them and turned their life around and is using them to do amazing things. God, Jesus, called Matthew. He was willing to follow him, to turn his life around, and God did amazing things through him. However awful we think we are, however far from God we think we are, in his mercy, Jesus still says to us, follow me, and is willing to do remarkable things in our lives. Why would Matthew respond? Leave his good job, just get up and go, and respond to this call to follow. Well, Matthew, who writes this gospel, I'm sure did it deliberately and places before this story stories of Jesus performing miracles. The beginning of chapter 9, we see Jesus forgiving and healing a paralyzed man. Actually, we see Jesus is... Didn't want FIFA back. There we go. Jesus is willing. Jesus is able to forgive sin. Jesus is the one who's able to heal disease. Matthew sees, hears about Jesus, who is the one who will come and show mercy, who will take mercy on this man. And so when he stands in front of him and says, follow me, he's ready and he's willing to respond. As we go, as we're people who do and who go out and who show mercy to people in this world, it will draw people to follow Jesus. It will make them people who are willing to respond to that call to follow him. It's not the motivation, it's not the reason that we go and we do it. We do it because God has shown us mercy and calls us to show mercy to people in this world. But we see how it changed Matthew's life, the mercy that Jesus showed. So how do we respond? What does it mean for us to go and to show mercy? There's those around us who are the marginalized, who are the oppressed, who are the poor, who are those rejected. It's a great morning, actually, to hear about Food Bank and the work that they're doing with some of the most needy who are in our town around us. Maybe it's the people who aren't here, who are in our town who we don't see represented in this church, that we're not connected to, that maybe we don't welcome. Maybe it's people you know who are in your work, your school, your neighbours, down your street, who you know are those who have no one. We need to be a people willing to show mercy. I want to think a bit about how we might respond to the refugee crisis in our world today. I don't want us to spend our time beating ourselves up about what we haven't done or that we're not good enough people. Yes, we want to mourn the tragedy of what is happening. Yes, we want to be angry about those who aren't doing enough, for those who have responsibility and aren't taking it. We want to be angry about those who are taking advantage of the marginalized in this world. But we also want to act with determination to show mercy and compassion. I wanted to share just a few of the statistics and the details of what is happening in the world today. These come from Amnesty International. There are more than 4 million refugees from Syria, and they're in just 95% of them are in just 5 countries: Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq, and Egypt. The UN humanitarian appeal for those refugees is just 40% funded. Funding shortages mean that the most vulnerable Syrian refugees receive just $13.50 a month, or less than half a dollar a day for food assistance. In total, there's 104,000 resettlement places that have been offered globally since the start of the crisis, which equates to 2.6% of that total number of refugees. 400,000 people in the 5 main host countries, or 10%, are in need of resettlement, according to the UN Refugee Agency. who followed BBC News, you would have seen a story just recently of a refugee who had been settled somewhere else, who received by text message information from the UN saying that the money that they received for food, which was $1 a day for each person in their household, was going to stop. And so the report was saying how they felt they had no other option but to take that dangerous journey and to travel to try and get to Europe to find somewhere where they might be able to have money to live and to survive. They viewed their choice as either trying to get out or starving to death. How do we respond? The first thing that we can do is to pray, because we believe in a God who can change situations, who can change this world that we live in, a God who can stop boats capsizing, who can make wars cease, who can change the hearts and minds of leaders. We believe in a God who is powerful. We can pray. There's two suggested places up there that give information about how we can pray, about the things we can be praying for. The slides, this section of the slides, are going to be up on the website. If you go to the homepage of the website and click where it says latest news, you'll find a link to download these slides. And later they'll go on Facebook and Twitter as well, if you want to find them, so you don't have to try and scribble down the links that are there. We can pray. We can campaign. There are two main petitions that are running at the moment. There's one which is a national one started by The Independent, asking David Cameron to take in more refugees. And there's another local one, there, 38 Degrees, which is a local one for our local council, asking them to make spaces available for refugees. You can also write a letter. I know some people aren't so keen on petitions, but would rather put it in their own words. There's a link there to Tear Fund, where they give you advice about letter writing to your MP. Write a letter to our MP, Fiona McTaggart. Write a letter to our local council about this issue, if you're good at doing that. Getting more challenging and more intimate, we can open our doors. If you have a property that's available for rent, then there are ways that you can make that available for the local council to be able to use it for refugees. There was this amazing thing that happened over the last week or so, where a Baptist minister put something out through social media, having seen, I think it was Iceland, where an author challenged people to host refugees, and they had 11,000 people offered to do it. And a Baptist minister said, couldn't actually we do something like that among our Baptist churches? Are there Baptist churches who could offer to host five refugees? And so far, 250 places have been offered through the Baptist Union, Baptists Together. Is that something that we could do, that people in this church could do? They're currently working on how that might practically work, how they can link with agencies to make that be possible. You've probably heard in the news about the unaccompanied children who come, who need foster care. If you go through Home for Good, there's a way that you can get in touch and you can offer to provide foster care for some of the unaccompanied children coming in to this country. We can offer welcome and support. There's been churches who've been gathering things to provide for those who are living in Calais at the moment. I heard just the other day about something amazing that's happened in Windsor. Some of you might know more about this than I do, where one mum said, what could I do? Phoned up a charity who said, well, you could collect things. We need supplies for babies and children. We need clothes, we need nappies. So she started getting people together, put it out to who she knew, started a collection in Bachelor's Acre Park. Huge numbers of people came. They had more things they could do than they can cope with. They ended up getting a human chain of people to move it all to where it was going to be stored. Then the fire brigade heard about it and they offered one of their rooms for it all to be stored. They filled up this meeting room in the fire brigade, and now they've had to get a lorry to come and take it all up to Manchester for it to be sorted and used by this charity. Because one person said, what can I do? And made a phone call. longer term. There's something called welcome boxes that's been happening for quite a long time in some different churches. It's quite simple. It's a sort of food bank-ish model where through agencies they refer people to this charity. Welcome boxes, people who've just come to the country, people who don't know anyone else, who've just been resettled. And they go, and someone goes and visits them and takes them a box to welcome them. Quite often, that's the first person they meet in where they've been settled who's not an official. The first person who comes and says, I'm happy just to be a friend. The number of people we come and have settling amongst us. There's a link there to some more information about it. And it says if you're interested in doing it, then what it needs is someone with half a day a week to start exploring it and finding out more. And finally, we can give. We can give to support what others are already doing amongst this crisis. There's two charities there, Tearfund, who we often support as a church, who we regularly give to, who are doing work across Europe through the local churches, who are doing work in the Middle East. And Open Doors, who are specifically working within Syria at this time, supporting those who are still there, providing the bare necessities that they simply don't have at this time. Five things we can do as we seek to show mercy to some of the most needy people in this world. Pray, campaign, open our doors, welcome and support, and give. Jesus said, I desire mercy. Will we be a people who are willing to show it? Let's pause. Let's do that first thing together now. Let's pray.